was a seventh-round pick in the 1988 NHL entry draft by the Washington Capitals, played for the Capitals, the Colorado Avalanche, the Philadelphia Flyers in his NHL career, and, of course, now a longtime analyst in the NHL. Keith Jones joins us. Keith, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How's everything going there?
Things are going pretty well. There's no snow on the ground, so we'll take it for October 13th. That's always a benefit. And we like to talk in story time, Keith, just about guys. Everybody has a different and unique path to make it to the National Hockey League. Growing up in Ontario, were you a kid who was on the outdoor rink playing road hockey right from a young age?
Yeah, I grew up in Brantford, of course, Gretzky's hometown, but I went to school at a school just around the corner from my house, public school called Grand Woodlands, and the parents would flood the tennis courts and turn it into an arena. They basically would put boards up around, and you'd have nets up with no netting, and the kids would play all day long, all day, all night, and then skate home afterwards down the middle of the road. Great memories of doing that. Loved every second of it and was always dreaming of playing in the NHL for sure when we were skating around there. Actually, the first team, organized team that I played for was on an outdoor school circuit where we played at that rink I was just talking about and then went to other rinks around. And none of us wore helmets back then. And you sat in a snowbank. If you weren't out on the ice, that was your bench. And even thinking back, I was probably 5 or 6 years old when I think of it. And I can still, you know, really have vivid memories of just how great those days were.
Oh, it's so pure. Like, there's something about playing outdoors, isn't there? I mean, even, you know, now I'll go and play with my kids, but I love being outdoors, and it's a pretty cool experience to be playing. I can't imagine actually having games outdoors. I only practiced outdoors when I was younger.
Yeah, it was interesting, and you were cold, man. You wore a toque. You didn't wear a helmet. That's how cold it was, and I can just remember some kids didn't enjoy it very much, but I know that I absolutely loved it and never wanted it to end. We actually had floodlights put in so you could play at night, and that was, you know, that's going back a long time ago. That was a real treat. We were lucky that we were able to do that and play underneath the lights, and there was a pickup game that was happening pretty much day and night, and there was always a group of kids that wanted to play, and adults too, for that matter.
So, Keith, you start out on the outdoor rink and then you start working your way up. Were you always an offensive player growing up? Did you play defense? Did you ever play goal? How was it as a kid?
I was a very good offensive player as a young guy. And I'm talking from, you know, 6 till probably 12 or 13. And then I started to think about playing goal because I wasn't growing and everybody else was the size of Jason there. So it was those were tough times because I was trying to navigate through some uncharted territory of being a smaller player at that time. And a lot of the guys had the hairy armpits, and I was just hoping I would get one at some point in my life. But those were some panic days back then. But eventually I hit a growth spurt and started to figure things out as a bigger guy.
Jonesy, why were you so offensively inclined? Like, was it just the time outside, or you think in the game, or what made you give you that ability? Because I wish I would have had a little bit of that.
Yeah, you know, I did think the game pretty well offensively. I love to get points. I actually like to pass the puck and get an assist more than I like to score the goal as a younger player. And I was just a little bit better than everybody else that I was playing with. And I, you know, played with some really good players back then. But I was just, offensively a step ahead of them and kind of settled into playing center a lot. And then I played wing later on as I became an older teenager. But center was a position that I really enjoyed playing. And I don't know, the offensive side of the game just came rather easily to me.
We're joined by Keith Jones. Keith, you went the university route, and of course, when you were 20 is when you started at Western Michigan. So you never played major junior. You played for the Niagara Falls Canucks in the GHL when you were 19. You had 50 goals, 130 points in 40 games, 3 points a game. What is the GHL?
That is Junior B hockey. So it's a notch below tier two. And I was so happy that I made junior B. I thought it was like one of the proudest days of my life. I was not drafted to the OHL after playing midget triple A hockey. And then I went to play junior C hockey after getting cut from junior B, and Brantford actually, who had a team back those days, Rob Blake actually played for the Brantford Classics. And I tried out there and became really good friends with Rob, but did not make the team. So I didn't know if I was going to keep playing or not, but they had junior C hockey in Paris, Ontario. We rode a school bus to the games. You wore a pair of blue jeans and cowboy boots. You drank all the beer and chicken wings you could down after a game. And girlfriends and wives traveled to the away games with you on the school bus. Some guys were 20 years old. I was 15 or 16 at that time, maybe even 17. And I thought that was going to be it for me. So when I made junior B in Niagara Falls, that was a day I remember talking to my father saying, man, this was great. I made the team. I can always tell my kids I played junior B hockey. And it's just incredible where things went from there.
Keith Jones joins us. Well, man, you took off. As I mentioned, 50 goals in 40 games. And for any of our listeners, that's equivalent to Junior A here in Edmonton, the Alberta Junior Hockey League. They just have different names for it. And then, of course, it's right under a Major Junior. And so is that when Western Michigan, did other universities come looking at you that year in 87-88?
I wasn't on the radar, I can tell you that. And until a scout for the Washington Capitals, Sam McMaster, who later on went to become the general manager of the LA Kings, came to watch a guy play named Jim Sully, played a lot in the minors, but he was like a 15-year-old kid, and I was a 19-year-old first-year junior B player. And he said after the game to my head coach that he wanted to talk to me after the game. Listen, I was in shock. When he said the Washington Capitals, I was like, are you kidding me? So, because I was a fan of the Maple Leafs, I went to games. My girlfriend's parents had season tickets to Maple Leaf Gardens. I go to the Hot Stove Lounge. As a 19-year-old kid playing junior B hockey, never thinking I would ever be on the ice that I was looking down on as a fan of the Maple Leafs, watching Eddie Olchuk skate around. So when he said he was from the Washington Capitals, I was just really taken aback. And he said, listen, you're not ready now. You've got a long way to go. You may never make it, but I think you've got something. And he said, I'm going to have some colleges come and look at you. And if they like what they see, hopefully we can talk them into giving you a scholarship and see if you can develop physically to a point where you're able to put it all together. And that was in about December of that year. So I guess that would be in 1987. Never heard from him again. But the school started to show up. Western was one of them. Lowell was another. And another school in Boston, Northeastern was the other one. And I went to Western Michigan, visited there. The head coach, his name was Bill Wilkinson. They had a very good team. Played with Mike Eastwood there. But he took me out on my recruiting trip. We became very good friends right from that point on. And then ended up after Bill Wilkinson watched me play four or five more times, actually brought me there and still wasn't convinced that he wanted to give me a scholarship, had to watch me a couple more times before he offered me a full ride to go there. So that didn't happen until February of that junior B year. And then I settled and said, yeah, I want to come to Western Michigan, and then kind of had the hockey side of it take off from that point on.
Well, and then, you know, the Capitals scout must have really liked you because they ultimately drafted you that year. Did you hear at all anything from just before the draft, or was it kind of unexpected that you'd get drafted at that point?
It was unexpected. And I hadn't heard from him from the one time that I talked to him after that game, Jay, but it was in Niagara Falls. And I remember exactly where I was in the dressing room after. And the day I was drafted, I was at Flamborough Downs betting the horses. And I wasn't at the draft, I can tell you that. I came back home. My dad was sitting on the porch, and he's, like, looking all happy. And I go, what's wrong with you? He says, you've been drafted. And I asked him if we were going to war. And he said, nope. you've been drafted to the NHL. Because I never even told my parents that the Washington Capitals had talked to me, because I still just couldn't believe that that was something that actually they would be considering, was picking me to someday play for them in the NHL. So that's how far-fetched things were. They actually called from the draft. And of course, there's no cell phones in 1988. And they said to my mother, listen, we got a draft list here with 1,500, 1,800 kids on it. That's when the draft was 12 rounds. They said, your son's name's not on it, but we need to confirm how old he is. Can you, when's he born? This is from the draft table. My mother says he's born November 8th, 1968. He says, great. Listen to this. And he held up the phone and said, I think it'd be David Poyle at that time, said, the Washington Capitals select Keith Jones with the 141st pick. So my mother got to listen to that on the phone while they made the selection, and they told my mom, tell him not to leave the house tonight. We're going to call him at 8 o'clock and we want to talk to him, and et cetera. So that's how my mom found out I was drafted. She had the, I guess, the pleasure of listening to it over the phone.
Keith Jones, join us, longtime NHLer. Jonesy, so the 4 years at Western Michigan, you know, obviously it seemed like at that, when you entered, you were a bit of a project. So, you know, the points came in every year improvement, but what did you, and the coaching staff, and I guess in some ways Washington, what was the plan for you to kind of develop this raw material into something that could be, you know, NHL worthy one day?
Yeah, it was all about getting stronger. I had never lifted a weight before I arrived in college. Now, let's think about this. I've been drafted to the NHL. When the Caps called me that night, I was looking at my arms and my belly thinking, I don't know if these guys know what they got here. I was skinny arms and a fat gut. I still didn't go to the gym, though. I talked to one guy that was at Western Michigan named Paul Polito. He lived in Brantford. I said, Paul, what have we got to do here? What's this? You know, playing junior E, we practiced all the week and played games on the weekends. That's it. So don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about it. He was just BSing me at that time, screwing with me. So I showed up at camp, hadn't lifted a weight. Mike Eastwood was spotting me on the bench press on the first day of testing. And I looked around. I'd never benched before. And I looked at all these guys. And they were warming up with the 135, you know, the 245s. And I looked at that. I said, that doesn't look too bad. I got underneath there to do a warm-up, and I couldn't get it back up. And I'd been drafted. I've been drafted to the NHL and couldn't lift 135 pounds. So needless to say, the first 6 months was a living hell. I wanted to quit every day. And Bill Wilkinson just kept skating me and skating. My legs weren't strong enough. My upper body obviously wasn't strong enough. I was in the gym with the football guys every day and also trying to, you know, develop as a hockey player. So it's a remarkable thing when I look back on it that I think if Bill Wilkinson could have changed his mind, he would have sent me home that day, but he stuck with me. I guess he had no choice. He had 4 years of a scholarship he owed me.
Oh, my God.
So that's how things started there. So my first year was a real grind. I can tell you I was always a gamer, though. I always enjoyed playing. I always enjoyed bugging the opposition. If I felt like I wasn't, you know, well enough condition, I'd do something stupid to pull somebody into a scrum and try to change the momentum of the game. And all those little things are what enabled me to survive and eventually get stronger and start doing a lot more of the things that you should be doing as a potential professional athlete.
Keith, just a great, unique career path for you as you got drafted. Then you played your full 4 seasons at Western Michigan, and you got better every year. You mentioned you got stronger physically. You know, your point totals went up. And then at the end, when you graduated in 91-92, you played 6 games in the American League, had 6 points in 6 games. Then you went to your first NHL training camp, or at least I assume it was, because when you're in college, you're not supposed to go, 92-93. You start the season in the AHL. You score 7 goals, 10 points in 8 games. And boom, you're called up. Tell me how you were able to, you know, kind of transition to pro hockey so effectively right out of college.
I think age had a lot to do with it. I was 23 years old, just about to turn 24. So I knew the window was really, like, really tight. And I knew I had to make an impression right away. And I was a pretty mature player just based upon being older than a lot of the guys that were arriving at their first training camp. So I had a decent camp with the Capitals. I argued with David Poile. I told him I should have made the team. The only reason I did that, the first game was against the Maple Leafs, and that was the only game the Capitals would play them all year long. And that was a team, of course, like I said earlier, I cheered for. So I think he thought I was a lot hungrier than maybe I even was. But if I was going to play one game in the NHL, I wanted to play against the Maple Leafs, because Jason can tell you, you never really know that you're going to stay for long. You just are hoping that you're good enough to be there. And getting that first opportunity was what I was looking for. I can tell you this. I did produce a lot in the minors. My last game there, though, was an interesting one. Barry Trotz was the head coach in Baltimore. We played the Utica Devils, I believe, at that time, if that's what they were. Anyway, the Devils farm team. We lost 10-8. The last goal was an empty net goal for the Devils. I was on the ice for that. That put me at -7 for the game. And that puck, I remember to this day, I don't think it made it over the goal line. So I started arguing with the referee about this empty net goal that meant nothing. It either went in with no time on the clock or 0.1 seconds, whatever. But I was -7. And I'm arguing with him, and he says, I'm swearing at him and all this. And he's like, what do you care? The game's over. I go, I'm freaking -7. And that was the last game that I played for Baltimore. Barry Trotz came in the next day, and he went, this is an honest to God's truth. He went over the film with the tape with everybody the next day. And he said, we have a guy that was -7 in this game and had his guy every time. And that was my ongoing joke for the rest of my career. I always said, I have my guy. I have my guy. But I was a -7. And I roomed with two guys that were in the minors with me, because Baltimore and Washington were so close geographically. We shared the same practice rink. And the Capitals were on a road trip. They were in Vancouver. You guys will love this. I know I'm close. I know I'm getting close. They've got a couple injuries. They've got some guys that aren't playing well. And I've got some good numbers to back it up, as you just mentioned. And I know I'm close, but I slept, I had a loft. I was upstairs from where the other two roommates were. And I had a Sony Walkman, a yellow one, one of those ones that were, if you dropped them, they wouldn't smash. And I'm listening to the game. It's about 11 o'clock Eastern, because it's in Vancouver. And Kevin Miller, who was there, was traded for Dino Cicerelli the year before, was struggling. And he took a five-minute major for spearing in the third period. And I've got my Walkman on listening to it. I don't hear the phone ring. My roommate has to tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, it's David Poile for you. I pick up the phone. He says, hey, Keith, you're on a flight tomorrow morning at 6:30 to Calgary. And we're calling you up. Don't know if you're going to play tomorrow night or not, but just be ready to go. And that's how I found out that I was going to play my first game in the NHL.
And your first game was October 30th, 1992, against the Calgary Flames. Then the next night on Halloween, you played the Edmonton Oilers. And then in your third game, Keith, November 3rd, at home in Washington against the Chicago Blackhawks. Oh, my goodness. The first ever home game for you.
You know what? It wasn't a home game. That's the best part of it. That was a neutral site game.
Oh, okay.
It'll show as a home game. That was a neutral site game in Indianapolis, Indiana, where Gretzky had played some hockey. And I had a couple buddies come up from college. I was skating around on a warm-up. No helmet on, looking at myself in the glass, you know, thinking I'm pretty cool. And my one buddy yells at me from the top of the glass, startled me. I stepped on a puck and went head first into the boards. So I didn't even know if I was going to play that game or not. So that was the first. My first goal came a couple of minutes into that game against Eddie Belfour, and picked up a couple of assists after that, and was thinking, man, is this it? Is there another league? I should just about this is too easy.
This is too easy.
It was the absolute best. It was the best. My first shift in Calgary, by the way, I broke my front tooth in half. Theo Fleury, I went to hit him. He elbowed me in the mouth, and my tooth broke right in half. I was like, all right, I'm here now. So,
now, who's your line mates those first couple games?
So I played with Dale Hunter and Pat Elenik after, I think, in game three against Chicago. I started on the fourth line with Jeff Greenlaw and Alan May. And then eventually got bumped up to play with Dale Hunter, which was really a pivotal moment in my career. As you guys know, he was a heck of a hockey player, but he was a great leader and really was a great example for me and a guy that kind of took me under his wing like a stepson almost. You know, he had me over for dinner with the family. And ironically, I ended up taking his brother Mark's job. Mark was playing for the Capitals at that time and had broken his hand and never made it back up. And that was the last time he played professionally, was a few games at the start of that year with the Capitals. But never mattered to Dale. He just made me real comfortable and taught me a lot about how to play the game and how to play it feisty and pesky. And if you're not scoring, doing something that you're still noticeable and trying to make a difference in the game, that there was no nights off. So I owe a lot to him, and really enjoyed playing with Pat Elenik too, of course, was with Winnipeg prior to coming over to the Capitals.
Keith Jones joins us on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Well, Keith, you spent 4 years in Washington, and just like your college career, you seemingly got better most years. You had 41 points, 18 goals in your fourth season. Then you start the next year, 11 games in, and you get traded to the Colorado Avalanche, a pretty good team. Tell me about how that trade went down, and what was your initial reaction?
Well, the trade went down. I had been feeling badly, and Jim Schoenfeld, one day after practice, I was laying on the ice doing snow angels. I was exhausted, and I was staring up at the ceiling. He goes, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "I'm beat." He goes, "That's it. You're going to the Mayo Clinic," he said. I go, "I don't know about that." They sent me down the road to get some blood work taken because I don't know if I had mono or I'd been bonked on the head a couple of games before, and probably, thinking back to those days, probably had a bit of a concussion or something. So I was waiting for these results to come in, and I was a little nervous about it. You know, you start thinking, geez, I wonder if I got something really wrong here. So I asked the trainer in Long Island. We're playing a road game there. I had brought one toothbrush with me. It was a one-night trip. I had it sticking in my suit pocket. I walked into the locker room prior to the game, asked Stan Wong, the trainer, "Hey, are you getting any news there? I don't know. I slept 17 hours the night before." So he said, "I haven't heard nothing, Jonesy." So I sat down. I went out for the warm-up against the Islanders, came back in the locker room, had one skate on, one skate off, just talking to the guys, getting ready for the game. And Jim Schoenfeld walked in, and he said, "Hey, come out of my office." And I was like, "Oh, no." That's all I could say. I say, "He got the results. We got the results of my blood test." So I walked into his office in Long Island, my little coach's office there in Nassau with the dump. And I walk in there, and he's sitting there looking at me, all like sad looking. Right? And I'm like, "Oh, my God." He says, "Jonesy, I got some terrible news for you." And I'm telling you, my heart dropped to my ankles. And I'm like, "Oh, my God, this is terrible." He says, "You've been traded." And I said, "Thank God." And he goes, "You're taking it a lot better than I am." I said, "Oh, man, I thought it was going down." So he goes, "No, you've been traded." And I, you know, give him a big hug. And I asked him, "For who?" He says, "I can't tell you." All of us want to know what our value is, right? So I'm like, first time being traded. "What do you mean you can't tell me?" He said, "Well, we can't find the guy we traded for you." And I'm like, "That's just amazing." So I had no money. I had to borrow a quarter. Now, I come back in the room. All the guys are getting ready to go on the ice. I grab my hockey bag, three sticks, a quarter, and I go up to the lobby, to the corridor where all the fans are getting ready for the game. And I got to use a payphone to call the Avalanche to ask them how I'm going to get to Anaheim where they play the next day. So I talked to them on the phone. They said, "You got to take a cab to JFK. Remember, I got a toothbrush with me. That's it." And they said, "Jump on a plane. It stops in Atlanta and then heads there. Still don't know who I'm traded for. Had to borrow money to pay the cab to get me to JFK. Jumped on the plane, flew to Atlanta, called my wife, who was my fiance at the time, who I hadn't even got a hold of. She was at home in Michigan, to tell her that I'd been traded. She says, I know. I said, how? She goes, it just came across the ticker on ESPN2 that you've been traded. I said, do you know who for? And she said, yeah, Chris Simon and Curtis Decision. And I said, all right, I got some value. That's good. That's a good trade. And I flew the rest of the way to Anaheim, walked into the locker room the next morning. And the Avalanche had just won the Cup. Had Waugh, Sakic, Forsberg, Lemieux, and Ozilinch, Adam Foote. I walk into their pregame meal, and they're all sitting there looking at me, and a lot of guys didn't like playing against me. And I said to the entire room, don't worry, boys, I'm here. You're in good hands. They obviously, they had just won the Stanley Cup. They started laughing, and the rest was history there. Became great friends with a bunch of awesome players there.
Oh, yeah, Keith Jones joins us. And yeah, Keith, I was going to mention, you get in there. Hey, you scored 23 goals in 67 games with the Avs. So you fit right in. The only guys, Dedmarsh and Kamensky and Forsberg, are the only guys who finished with more goals you that year. Who did you play with normally in Colorado that first year?
Yeah, I started with Forsberg and Kamensky because Claude Lemieux had had surgery in the offseason. So he was out for a couple of months. What a pleasure that was, I'll tell you. I was and in Washington, I played with Pavanka and Bonder my last couple of seasons there, so I was used to playing some top-line minutes, but most importantly, trying to provide distractions to keep guys away from those guys and also have them chasing me around the ice to give them a little open space. But it was Forsberg and Kamensky, had all kinds of tap-ins. It was a lot of fun and a great experience. And then what I got demoted to play with Sakic and Dedmarsh. That was a real tough fall for me to take, as you can imagine.
Yeah, it's amazing. Those teams were so good. Like, it was almost, there was that run of a number of years where it was like an all-star team. They were going to kill some penalties. And it'd be like, you know, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, and then you're like, and Jason Strudwick, you know, trying to kill the penalty. Like, those teams were so good, Jones. I mean, you know, obviously you were a good player and you could play with those guys, but, you know, was there ever a moment you're like, holy geez, these guys are amazing. I just got to just do my job and everyone else will take care of everything else.
Yeah, it was, that was a pretty cool feeling knowing that, you know, if you made a good play, there's a good chance you're going to get a point. And I will tell you this, when you play in front of Patrick Waugh, he doesn't miss a thing. Like, if you cheated on a play, didn't matter who you were, he was going to call you out. Like, his mind was incredible. And you might not have scored a goal in a game, but you might have made two or three really subtle plays that went a long way to help the team win. He was the first guy there to recognize that and come up to you and tell you, you know, you had a great game. And just the little things like that, you learn a lot from playing with winners, number one, and then guys that are as talented as they were. Waugh was really, as much as Sakic was the captain and great at, you know, delegating leadership, Waugh was the guy that really ran the room from a real technical basis anyway. He was an amazing teammate.
Keith Jones joins us, a longtime NHL. And Jonesy, you went from a very talented team in Colorado, traded to Philadelphia. And I'd love to get your initial impressions as a teammate of Eric Lindros and what he was like at that time.
Yeah, I played with him right away. Roger Nilsson said to me, you know, Jonesy, we're going to try you with Lindros. I said, don't worry, it'll be fine, Rog. And played with John LeClair, Eric Lindros, and it was unbelievable. I went from Forsberg, Sakic to Lindros, and I'm like, this is a good life coming from junior C hockey. So it was an awesome experience. He was a bull. He'd knock everybody over. He was an extremely hard-working player in practice, which was something that really stood out to me. I wish I was 100% healthy playing with him because I came in with a bum knee. Still had a good season, but Lindros was a beast. And there was times when I played with Forsberg and we played the Flyers, he would tell me to take the face off because Lindros would come right at you and bull rush you. And Peter didn't like a whole lot of that. As much as Peter liked playing physically, he didn't want to deal with Lindros all night long. So, and there was some inner competition there because they were involved in the same trade for each other, thinking back to that Nordiques trades, right? So, he was awesome. He was awesome.
Keith Jones joins us. Now, Keith, I want to quickly go back to Colorado. You got there when the heat of the Avalanche-Red Wings rivalry was, like, that was legit animosity, right? Like, when those two teams met each other, like, those games were just fierce and ferocious. How was it for you, and had you ever been in a rivalry quite as heated as that one?
Never seen anything like that. You know, when you play in Philly, or when you play in Washington, Washington Flyers have a big one, but it was nothing like this. And that was what separated it was the star players going after the star players. It wasn't, you know, six or seven tough guys that both teams sent out in the old Patrick division and everyone's fighting. And if you're the eighth guy to go, you're counting the guys down the bench going, I'm next. It wasn't like that. It was your top guys involved both teams. And I will tell you this. The Red Wings get a lot of credit for the Russian Five and all the great things that they did there. They're not winning the Stanley Cup if Brendan Shanahan doesn't show up. He changed the complexion of that team. They had Lapointe. They had McCarty. They had Koser. They had some really tough and intimidating players to go up against. And to be honest with you, the year I arrived there, Chris Simon was traded for me. So we didn't have that. And they took advantage of that. And that was a big mistake by Colorado. Not the trade for myself, but not replacing Chris Simon. I always wish they would have brought Craig Berube over with me and we would have had a lot more fun because we were lacking that type of player. We didn't have enough to go up against them, to be honest with you.
Keith Jones. Keith, one last one before I let you go, of course, with your everyday job. You're a great analyst. I want to get your thoughts on free agency and the Taylor Hall, of course. He was the biggest forward available, signs a one-year deal in Buffalo, $8 million. Do you think Ralph Kruger will play him with Jack Eichel regularly, or do you think he'll have Eichel on one line and Hall on the other because they can both drive a line?
I think with Hall on a one-year deal, he's probably been promised that he'll play with Eichel.
Okay.
For him to sign that, and I listen, he's got a lot to prove. Taylor Hall's got a lot to prove. And there's a lot in his game that doesn't jump out to me like he's built to win. He's not a give-and-go player. He carries the puck a lot. And for wingers that carry the puck, seldomly do they turn into the game-changing players when the playoffs roll around. I think there's some caution there, and I think a lot of teams were cautious in going after him and did not want to lock him up to a long-term deal. And it's incredible when you think back to a guy that won the MVP, a former first overall talent. I don't think that teams were jumping up and down to try to get him locked up to a long-term deal. So he's got a lot to prove, and I would expect him to want to do that with Eichel. I don't know if it'll work. I'm not sure. Eichel likes to carry the puck, too, so we'll see how that goes.
Keith, thanks so much for your great stories. We really appreciate it. We'll have it back again soon.
Yeah, enjoyed it, guys. Take care. See you guys.
You betcha.